South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford publicly confessed that his soulmate was a woman in Argentina who was not his wife, which was just after the Elizabeth Edwards book tour, where she talked about the child that her husband allegedly had with a woman who was not her, which was, of course, right on the heels of John and Kate splitting up after reports that he had an affair, which was all before Nevada Senator John Ensign admitted paying $96,000 in cash to his former mistress and her husband after her husband found out about their relationship.
We just heard a clip of Ira Glass, host of NPR's This American Life from 2009, giving us a laundry list of the latest philanderers in public life then. 2 years later, the beat goes on. Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher, the latest former California governor and fitness icon Arnold Schwarzenegger. Fathered a child with, we found out this week, fathered a child with one of his domestic employees about 14 years ago, and federal campaign finance charges against the former North Carolina senator and two-time presidential candidate John Edwards now appear increasingly likely. A federal grand jury in North Carolina has been examining his role in funneling money from political donors to a former campaign aide, Riel Hunter, in a possible attempt to cover up an extramarital affair with her, according to sources familiar with that investigation. There are others: Elliot Spitzer, Bill Clinton, Gary Hart, Nelson Rockefeller, John F. Kennedy, Franklin Roosevelt. Why, and why do we care? Joining us now to talk about that is relationship expert and the Love Doctor columnist, Dr. Terry Orbuck. Terry recently wrote a column in the Huffington Post that asks the eternal question, why do powerful men risk it all to cheat? To our listeners, do you care or not? Let us know, or call or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you want to give us a call, the number is 614-292-8513. You can go to our website at wosu.org/allsides and post it on Facebook there as well. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Thanks for having me, and good morning.
I guess we should put it into all of this into context. The circumstances in the Schwarzenegger affair and many others aren't necessarily unusual. They'd been married a long time. The statistics generally show that infidelity isn't unusual in our society anymore, and that it may be increasing in older Americans. You wrote about that in your column this week.
That's correct, Anne. The second most common time for divorce happens between people being married about 20 to 25 years. Arnold and Maria were married for 25 years, and we do see in the last two decades that infidelity has been increasing for both married women and married men. So it is not uncommon. But what we're seeing is that, in the media at least, we are seeing many more powerful men, men who have influence, wealth, and celebrity, engaging in infidelity.
And they seem, what's amazing to some people is how they don't seem to be worried about getting caught. And this hasn't happened in a long time, but Gary Hart, the former U.S. senator, actually invited the press to follow him around to prove to them that he wasn't fooling around. And of course, they caught him on that boat. Was it called Monkey Business?
Right, exactly.
I just happen to remember that off the top of my head.
So that hasn't exactly
happened, but they preach and they profess to be, you know, paragons of virtue, and then.
Yes, and I think it's what we call the Superman phenomenon, and it's that illusion of invulnerability, invincibility, that if you're going to engage in infidelity, you're not going to get caught. And so they think they're not going to get caught, or even if they do get caught, that they have the resources, that they have the people around them to cover it up. So they're really not worrying about the long-term effects of this behavior of going outside the marriage. They're only worried, or they're only concerned with the short-term benefits. And so that it really is the Superman. I am invincible. I will show you. I'm not going to be caught.
It seems as though their aides must not be giving them the clips on all the other public officials who have been busted. Let's pick Elliot Spitzer out of the can right off the bat. He was working to prosecute prostitution rings, and he was one of their biggest customers.
I think the real issue, though, Anne, is that we all feel that we're different from everybody else, that we're invincible in general. I mean, when we think about why people smoke cigarettes, and they know the statistics about, you know, cigarette smoking leads to cancer, individuals feel themselves that they are invulnerable to cancer, or they are invulnerable to the effects of smoking cigarettes. So in general, what we see psychologically in all individuals is that even though we know it can happen to others, even though we know the stats, we've seen the films, as you said, it's not going to happen to us. And we're somehow different than everybody else. And I think that's what's happening to Arnold and other powerful men, that, okay, those other people made a mistake. They're getting caught. I'm not going to get caught.
My guest is Dr. Terry Auerbach. She is an expert on relationships. You may have seen her column. It's called The Love Doctor. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. There's a cultural undercurrent here, though, too. We had a caller, left a message saying, why did Solomon have 700 wives and 200 concubines? I mean, the conquering of the other sex, the women, or that idea of sexual success is also sort of like, you know, the notches on the bedpost kind of a thing. That's part of an identity, too,
right,
of power.
That's part of the power notion. That's part of sort of, and I'm putting this in quotes, completely benefit some men feel they have or are available to as being a powerful man, as being a celebrity, that there are all these women and they're available. Also, it's the notion of that feeds their ego. It feeds the notion they continue to be powerful. But I think another reason, and that we need to talk about, is that many famous, wealthy, powerful men are addicted to the excitement, to the notion of doing something that isn't normal or isn't habitual, isn't routine. We know that many powerful men have positions that require a lot of responsibility and authority. They work well under stress, and they feed on that stress. And so having an affair, doing something, quote, wrong, doing something exciting, out of the ordinary, is very enticing to these men.
And it's a physical-chemical reaction.
And it's a physical-chemical reaction. I mean, I think it's physical-chemical, but it's also psychological.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's both. It's physical, the hormones are going, but also I'm psychologically addicted to stressful, exciting situations. When we think of politicians, we think of people who are highly intelligent, work really hard, doing the same old every day. And so doing something out of the ordinary, doing something out of their routine is actually pretty exciting to these men as well.
A social psychologist, Professor Martin Manto of the University of Portland, has said that putting on a public face, in other words, being President Clinton or Governor Spitzer, requires a great deal of effort, and that illicit sex may represent an escape from having to be on all the time. In other words, these guys need a break.
Absolutely. And it's really that the public image is very different than the private image that we see of everyone, but especially politicians and powerful men. And so what they're doing on the outside and the perfection that they have to engage in on the outside might be very different behind closed doors. And so I think he's right. The social psychologist is correct that they need that excitement. They need that out of the ordinary situation, relationships, excitement to be different than that public image.
Let's talk a little bit about how we respond to this kind of news, how society responds to it. And David from Columbus, you want to talk about how different countries view things like this differently. Welcome to the show, David.
Hi, Anne. Dominique Strauss-Kahn affair sort of highlighted this recently for me.
IMF, International Monetary Fund.
Former IMF chief.
Former, yeah.
DSK. I'm struck with how profoundly different the attitude seemed to be between many people in France and people in the United States. What I've been reading is that it was pretty much expected that any successful French politician would have multiple sexual partners outside of his marriage. And I've heard BFK's wife, Anne Sinclair, quoted as saying she didn't care if he seduced others, yeah, as long as he seduced her.
But isn't this a little different than that, David? He's been accused of sexual assault, right? I mean, isn't there a difference, Terry, between those two kind of issues?
I wanted to keep this the sexual assault out of it for the moment.
Well,
before this assault occurred, he engaged in multiple affairs.
Okay. I how do you keep the sexual assault part out of it, Terry Auerbach?
I think that most people are responding to the sexual assault, and that's their first response, that he coerced, he took his power and, engaged in sexual assault. And so that's, at least in the United States, I think what people are responding to first. In terms of what David is arguing here about the notion that there may be differences in terms of affairs, and outside of the United States, people are much more accepting of a politician, I think that in all cases, what powerful men have is a lot of people surrounding them. I call them yes people, who protect politicians, who protect these powerful men, idolize them, and enable them to engage in affairs. And so whether it's outside of the United States or inside of the United States, we don't tend to find out about the affairs until way later. And that's true of Arnold. That's also true of the former IMF leader.
Does it make any difference, to David's point, whether the public person is an elected public official versus an appointed sort of executive type of person who isn't necessarily directly accountable to the electorate?
I think it doesn't matter. Okay. I think we have the same responses when we're talking about celebrities who have affairs, who aren't elected or nominated. And so what we do is we tend to put these powerful men, powerful people, we idolize them, we tend to put them up on a pedestal, and we look to them to see what they're engaging in. And so when they engage in these affairs, infidelity outside of marriage, we have the same response whether they're elected or nominated or whether they're celebrities.
Thanks to David in Columbus for that call. My guest is Dr. Terry Auerbach. She's a relationship expert, professor at the University of Michigan in sociology and relationships, and she is also a columnist, The Love Doctor. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, from Georgia Tech to Michigan to Harvard, affluent students dominate top college enrollment. We'll look at what that means for the country. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. It's 69 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today. There is a good chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some of those storms could be severe with strong winds, and a high of 79 today. More showers and pop-up thunderstorms tonight, a low of 57.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design. Creative Futures begin in Saturday morning art classes for children and youth starting in June. Information and online registration at www.ccad.edu.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is Dr. Terry Auerbach. She is a relationship expert. She teaches sociology at the University of Michigan. She's also a columnist. The Love Doctor. just getting back to that power, the balance of power issue, Terry, for just a moment, when it comes to the Schwarzenegger case, there are questions about that balance of power. There's one thing when you're hanging out, well, it could happen probably with a lot of different examples, but she worked for him. She was household help.
Right, but I think the notion still, Anne, is that Arnold had power and resources in society, so that he was given resources, given power, given fame, and that's what carries with it certain qualities or characteristics, like the illusion of invulnerability, like this adrenaline dependency, like enabled by yes people, and ample opportunities for temptation. Yes, Arnold engaged in infidelity with someone inside of his household, but when we think of powerful men in general, we think that they are away from home for long periods of time. They have many people available to them to engage in infidelity. And so these ample opportunities for temptation, for separation, long separation from their wives, also affects or tempts them to engage in infidelity. Go ahead.
I was going to just introduce our next guest, Lane Wallace. She's a correspondent for The Atlantic Magazine. She wrote a recent blog for Atlantic, The Atlantic, called The Sex Differences in Sex Scandals. Why do these kinds of scandals so rarely happen with female politicians? She blogs on adventure and culture for The Atlantic and is writing a book about passion. Welcome to the show, Lane.
Thanks for having me.
So, what did you come up with when you wrote about the sex differences in sex scandals? You make up for the issue of, you write about the fact that, of course, many fewer women are public officials right at the outset.
Yeah, there are. I mean, 16.4% of Congress are women, and 12% of the nation's governors. So clearly there are fewer women. But I also noted that in 2009, Newsweek did a tally of 53 incidents of sexual scandal among politicians since 1976. And out of 53, one involved a female politician. So that's not 12 or 16%. So we're not even holding up our percentage of the scandals. So then I went into, well, why is that? We're really underrepresented in this kind of scandal or behavior.
Darn it. And so, yes, and I'm just joking. And so what did you come up with?
Well, I think the first fundamental thing is to look at what we see as attractive in this society. And there's a real difference in what we find attractive in men and women. For men, and I think your previous guest has gone into this a little bit, competence and power are seen as sexy and attractive in a man. And the things that denote that competence and power, money is a form of power. There are other forms of power, whether you're very important, you're famous, you're a celebrity, all that kind of thing. For women, this may change over the generations, but still primarily women are seen as what's sexy or attractive in a woman is still her looks, not her power. So for men, there is... Number one, for a man who is drawn to, I want power, why? Right? If you look at why are they drawn to powerful positions, whether it's Wall Street or politics, they look at this and they say, well, you know, what are the upsides that make up for either the long hours I'm going to work or, you know, the cost? I mean, being a politician these days, you look at it, you look at how much negative publicity comes out and you go, I wouldn't want to do that. For the people who decide they do want to do it, for a man, that power package comes with, I will be seen as more sexy and attractive, whether they verbalize that or not. It just is. For a woman, it's actually the opposite. You know, power and competence in a woman is still, unfortunately, seen more as threatening than sexy. And if a powerful woman is seen as sexy, generally, it's still because, oh, she's attractive and she also has this competence. But it does reduce. You know, if you become powerful as a woman, you kind of know you're reducing the number of men in the world who are going to be attracted to you, be able to handle you, and you make that choice consciously. So I think that's part of it, too, that a man, you know, they get – it's both in the same direction. You can get power and attractiveness, sex, all that comes with that. It all works in the same direction. For women, it works in opposite poles. To go for more power – is to reduce your sexual attractiveness in most circles. And so you have to kind of be in it for a different reason. You know, it's different.
Terry Auerbach, do you agree? And also, is there an element of the physiology in this, too, that women, we talked about the physiology of it, the adrenaline rush, that sort of a thing. Do women respond perhaps differently physiologically, too? Terry?
Well, I agree with what Lane is suggesting in terms of power meaning different things for men and women, and that if women have power, it's not seen as sexy or not as attractive. But I think another issue that's even more important is that men and women have affairs for different reasons. Usually an affair signals an internal need for change, either in your relationship or in your life. And when women are unhappy and unsatisfied, they tend to break up with the relationship before they seek others, before they seek someone else to have a relationship with. Men, on the other hand, when they're unhappy in their relationship or unhappy in their life, they're going to look to someone else to make them feel better, to affirm who they are. So I think there are lots of things going on, not only the physiology and the adrenaline rush and the difference for men and women, the issue of power and the meaning of power and how that's different if you possess it as a man or a woman, but also that men and women have affairs for different reasons and at different times when they're unsatisfied or dissatisfied in their current relationships.
Phil in Lancaster, you're on the show. Welcome.
Hey, well, thank you very much. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
All right. I was listening to this, and I thought this was relatively interesting, that the thought pattern is once these guys get to office, you know, they begin to look for other women. But I say to you that before they got this job, this is what their character was. It's not the fact they get a job and all of a sudden I'm at my job and I'm going to be looking for all these women to have affairs with. I believe that men had the same particular characteristics before they got the job. And then another thing, and I'll take my response off the air, is that what about the women? We've been talking about the men for a little while. Some of these women are also offering themselves to men in powerful positions, and that's been going on for years. And I just want to say thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil. Terry, you want to take a swat at that first idea that it's that this has been going on for a long time with these people, or that it's part of a lifelong process, not something that's triggered by elective office?
I think Phil makes a really good point, and I think that there is the notion that you need affirmation, you need validation, and that it doesn't come just because you are elected to a political office, that it really is saying something about you and your own personality, and that you needed that affirmation and validation even before you were elected governor or senator or president. And so it's this need for others to see me in a certain way, and it's this need for these other people to fill my ego. And I think that's a really good point that Phil makes.
Well, yeah, I would agree. This is Lane. I would agree that it's not that power makes anybody this way, that it's more that the people who have this need are drawn to follow career tracks that have power attached because of the rewards that come with it. And I think there also is a little bit of a disturbing connection. There is a power-sex connection for men that, yes, it's true that if you are powerful, you are seen as attractive. And Phil is right that there are plenty of women who are attracted to men who the only appeal is their power, whether it's money or politics or whatever. That is the draw. So it is a two-way dynamic that in consensual affairs, you know, it's kind of working for one reason or another with both of them, but that plays off each other. But that same power dynamic of if a man has sex with six women because of the history of sex being something you can use to prove power, it makes him feel good. Whereas a woman, it doesn't give you that, I'm good, I just had sex with six men. It's a really different dynamic and historically. And there is a dark side to it, too. So in a consensual affair, you just watch it and you kind of go, ugh. But it's there. I mean, Phil is right. It's there. It's a two-way street. It's just that two-way street doesn't work the same way with women.
Dr. Terry Auerbach, I know we have to say goodbye now. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Anne.
That's Dr. Terry Orbach. She's a columnist. She writes a column called The Love Doctor. She's also a relationship expert, and she teaches at the University of Michigan. Also with us still is Lane Wallace. She's a correspondent for The Atlantic Magazine. If you have a question or comment for Lane, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Jim in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a question regarding a condition called hypomania, which is less severe than bipolar disease. But with bipolar disease and hypomania, you have these very high-functioning people who need less sleep, who are on the go all the time. And at the same time, when it kind of leans over into bipolar disease, they start making very irrational, poor decisions. And I had read back, I think, when Bill Clinton had his affair, something about there's this thought that politicians may have a higher instance of hypomania, which, you know, drives them to succeed, but also can lean them over into this really bad decision making. And I was wondering if your expert had any comments on that.
Well,
the expert on that just got off the phone, right?
Lane is a correspondent for The Atlantic Magazine. But Lane, did you find any of that, any evidence of that kind of issue in your work?
You know, I'm not an expert in that field. And when in the people I talk to, no one brought up that particular issue. However, I would say, and this sort of echoes what Terry had said earlier and what Phil has said, is that people who, for whatever reason, whether it's bipolar, hypomania, emotionally damaged childhoods where they need a lot of reassurance about power, about I'm attractive, I'm accepted, I'm loved, whatever dynamic psychologically is going on with them, people who have this need for the strength of power or the bennies that come with it for men are drawn to professions that are going to give that to them. And so I think that whether it's hypomania or not, I think that is that is a pattern. And hypomania, although I'm not familiar with it, if it's as you describe, it would not surprise me if there were incidents of that.
Thanks, Jim, for the call. What about, Lane, how we react to these stories, how we react to the news that someone like John Edwards has been having a long-time affair, he's fathered a child with somebody who's not his wife, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you name them, there's part of our reaction as a function of the hypocrisy, isn't it?
There's a couple of things going on. Sure, I think there's actually two things going on to varying degrees with women, and it will vary from woman to woman. And you know, perhaps Phil can speak to how men react to this, but I think one is hypocrisy, especially if you ran on a platform for a politician, if you run on a platform of I'm a good family man, and then we find out that you're not such a good family man, there is that hypocrisy issue. If you never said you were anything and then you don't prove it, we do tend to idealize people and we get mad at them anyway. But I think there's another piece of it, which is especially if it's you know, you go, oh, that's not great behavior. We want our politicians, our leaders, right, to be perfect. I want someone who I love, their policies, I think their you know, the legislation they want to pass is something that I feel is good and protective of you know, my family and me and the things I care about. I also want them to be honorable to their spouse and a good community person and care about other people and have empathy and blah, blah, blah. I want it at all. We don't get that in our politicians. So when you are faced with an election, and generally you have two main choices in any election, you have to really start doing the math of, I like this about him, I don't like that about him. The problem is with some of these guys, and especially this does speak to the power dynamic of, is it someone you worked with and fell in love with and he said, I'm sorry, but I fell in love with this other woman and I've left my wife and I'm
a la Sanders.
Person.
Yeah.
Yeah, or, you know, it's the young, powerless intern, the powerless housekeeper, or, you know, God forbid, something, you know, or the hookers for Spitzer.
Right.
That is really tough for women because that's edging closer to a, and I mentioned this in the piece I wrote for The Atlantic, that there is a dark side to this power imbalance, which is that men can force sex on women anytime they want because there is this power imbalance, you know, with men and women and back in warfare and there was the raping and pillaging that came if you won. And there's shades of that. It's not the same thing, and I absolutely don't want to say it's the same thing. Consensual affairs are very, very different from from that, crossing that line into using, abusing that power. But it makes it tough for women, because we look and we say, it resonates with me in a way that makes me think, this is not a good dynamic. And I don't like it, because I've encountered abuse of this dynamic elsewhere in my life. You know, because most women have encountered it in some way, shape, or form, a boss, mm-hmm. or some guy at the supermarket, or some construction worker, or some, you know, wherever. So it hits us in that nerve. And it makes us feel worse about it in a way. And then it makes this math, when you like the policies and then they do something like this, it creates cognitive dissonance, you know. And you're faced with it being very angry at them, because they faced, you know, what's the choice now? Do I vote for the other person? Maybe I don't like their policies as well, but at least they didn't do this. And it puts us in a tough spot. So I think there's an anger that comes out of that. That varies, but I think that's definitely there, in addition to the hypocrisy of it.
What about the specter of the faithful wife standing at his side, the ashen-faced faithful wife standing at his side, saying, I know he's done wrong, but he's basically a good guy. Come on, everybody, you know.
You know, I think this is why everyone loved Jenny Sanford. I mean, everybody wanted to vote for her for governor, because she went, you know what? He's on his own. I have no idea what he was doing that weekend, and he's going to have to answer for his own actions, and I will deal with him privately and deal with my family privately. And I think women across America went, yes, about time, because it's humiliating for a woman to have to stand there like that. And maybe they decide to stay together, maybe they don't. But I think there is a gut reaction of, that's really what every woman wants to do. So I thought that was wonderful that she did that, because it wasn't being the good, smiling, ashen-faced wife who really wants to hit him with a frying pan but stands there and says, oh, I love him and I believe in him. None of that rings really true. We just feel awful for her.
Do you see that gender difference changing over time?
You know, I do, but I don't see it changing quickly. I even now, you know, when I look at 20-year-olds who really don't have the same fights to fight that 40, 50, 60-year-old women do, you know, a powerful woman is becoming more acceptable. First, it has to become acceptable. Then maybe it will become sexy down the line. So I don't think it's etched in stone, but look at how many thousands of years it's been in, you know, the dynamics been there, at least mm-hmm. 2,000 years. So I think it takes time, and I really don't think we're there or even close to there. 100 years from now, 200 years from now, you know, entirely possible.
Are these guys ever actually embarrassed by what happens and by what happens to their family and their children and that sort of a thing? Because, you know, you hear about the former South Carolina governor's walking on the beach with his girlfriend now. Elliot Spitzer's on CNN.
Yeah. You know, I can't speak for that. And I think there are, I will say, though, that there are a lot of self-absorbed people in the world that seem to rebound really well and move right on. And I do think, because we're not, you know, you just asked, is this going to change? I mean, a woman's behavior in her personal life is still, I think the standard is still different. And so if a woman cheated on her husband with some, you know, pool boy, she would have a little harder time rebounding, although I think that is changing. I think it's changing, but it's still, there's a difference there. Do they feel sorry? I know they feel sorry in the moment. They're really sorry they got caught. But I don't know, you know, I think that's a very personal thing. And maybe Phil, you know, as a male campaign consultant, maybe he has a different take on how do these people process it down the line? Do they shake it off? It's Teflon. Or, you know, do they just hide the fact that this really hit them?
Well, Lane, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
That's Lane Wallace. She's a correspondent for The Atlantic Magazine. She wrote a recent blog. You can check it out. It's called The Sex Differences in Sex Scandals. Why do these kinds of scandals so rarely happen with female politicians? We'll post it on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Coming up, we're going to talk about boomer women and how their power is changing in the world and their power to change their lives is changing. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our daily news loop e-newsletter at wosu.org/email.
This is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes, Hour 2 of All Signs begins. Tornadoes have been ripping through the nation's south and midsection this spring, killing people and destroying property. What if it happened here? Are we prepared in central Ohio? That discussion begins at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. And Sunday night on WOSU-TV, watch an evening that has become an American tradition. Live from the U.S. Capitol, it's the National Memorial Day Concert, honoring the service and sacrifice of our men and women in uniform. Watch Sunday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. And it's 69 degrees in downtown Columbus with cloudy skies. There is a chance of some pop-up showers and thunderstorms today. Some of those storms could be severe with strong winds, a high of 79 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms are likely tonight. Some severe storms are possible, a low of 57. There's still a chance of showers and thunderstorms for Friday, a high of 69. And then just a slight chance of rain Friday night, a low of 55. And Saturday is hopefully looking nice, partly sunny and a high of 80 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. There's never been a better time to be a boomer. It's a period of opportunity, according to Betsy Worley. She's the executive director of the Transition Network for Women 50 Plus. Betsy traveled to Columbus this week to speak to the Central Ohio chapter of the Transition Network. It's one of 10 chapters nationwide where women gather to ask the question, what's next? She's with us in the studio today. Welcome back to the show, Betsy.
Thanks very much, Ann.
So I wanted to kind of cut to the chase and ask, how has the Great Recession affected the answers to that question, what's next?
Well, I think the questions are what they always have been, which is, how do I find meaning at this stage of life? And I think for women, really, there are four areas that they're looking for at this stage. One is community. And building on your last conversation, I think as things happen in our lives, like divorce and other challenges, having a community of women around who you can share things with is even more important. I think a second is we're always looking for meaningful work, and that might be paid or unpaid. But again, this desire to be engaged in something that's bigger than ourselves. Third is learning. So we have a deep impulse to learn, and then just to have fun. So I think those things are recession-proof, but people experience them differently depending on how the economy is going.
You know, men could be asking the same questions at the same age. So I was wondering, what's the difference for them and women at this stage in their lives?
Women have a great asset, which is that they love to share what's going on in their lives and talk to each other. And we see that over and over in the Transition Network, that women come together. They are with a group of, let's say, 10 women whom they've never met before. You say, introduce yourselves, talk about your transition, and what you need some help with. And an hour later, you cannot tear them apart. They are having such a deep and personal conversation and really sharing important things. And what we see is that men don't communicate that way. They don't immediately get into that kind of a conversation. So women really support and help each other in a different way. And men, I think, look for much more for expert advice.
Or they internalize it.
And actually, I think some successful ways that men come together are more around activities. So they may not be talking about what's bothering them, what's frustrating them. In fact, I just heard of an organization in Australia that brings men together to do woodworking and carpentry projects, and then they do public service programs where they bring in kids to teach them. So that's a very different way of saying, look, I don't want to talk about what I'm feeling, but I just love to hang out with some other guys and do some things.
My guest is Betsy Worley. She's executive director of the Transition Network. If you have a question or comment for her, we're talking about baby boomers who happen to be women. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go on our website at wosu.org/allsides. You can post Facebook comments there. You say, Betsy, that it's never been better to be a boomer, but lots of folks 50 and older are really struggling right now. They're having a much harder time finding work because of their age. They're spending down 401ks to put their kids through college or just to pay the mortgage. What's in it for them right now?
Well, I think that's a very valid point. And I think one of the things that's happened in America is that, you know, income differences have expanded. So certainly there's a group of people who are going to live longer, be healthier, have education and experience, and have a lot of opportunities. And then there's a group who have to keep their nose to the grindstone, and life is very hard. I think one of the things that people can do at this stage is still to say, even if I need to keep working in whatever job I'm in, are there other ways I can find meaning? Are there community involvements I can have? So can I create kind of a parallel life in which I'm getting some fulfillment that I may not be getting from, say, my job?
The boomer generation is very different at one end than it is at the other end, isn't it?
Yes.
The women at the early end who came of age, their children, they had children younger, everything happened at a younger age. Now, a lot of more women are waiting to do a lot of things like get married and have children at an older age. How does that change the dynamic for your audiences?
I think we'll see. So, yes, the boomers really run from about age 47 to 65. So as we think about people we know, we understand that there are a lot of differences. I think a lot of the discussion is about the leading age boomers. And in fact, an interesting fact I heard recently is that the biggest group of boomers are 54. So we really haven't even seen the biggest wave of boomers. Everyone is looking at this.
They're 60. Not retired yet.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So they're still working. So I think what's happening is that the leading age boomers in their 60s are getting to the point of saying it's time to think about what's next. And I think as in the women's movement, they look around, they say, well, I'm not seeing a lot of other role models, so I'll figure it out on my own and then I'll help younger women. So I think in a sense, we're breaking new ground and others will be able to follow and it'll be a lot easier to figure out what your options are.
I imagine, though, that boomers who are retiring now or in the last few years are feeling a lot better about what their prospects are in retirement if they've worked and have their pensions under their belt and so forth. Medicare's still out there. Social Security's still out there. There are a lot of the options that have been out there are still out there for them. Now they're saying that these things may be gone for anybody under the age of 54 or 53. How do you bridge that gap of doubt? We don't know what's going to be out there in the future for us in terms of security.
That's absolutely true. And I think there's certainly many of the boomers who are retiring who are dependent on their own savings and investments. So I think women always tend to have the bag lady fear and
Dog food in a trailer in Deltona,
exactly.
Florida.
Yeah. All right. But
that's my
yes, that's exactly it. But I think all of us today realize we are going to have to stay on top of our finances, figure out what our costs are going to be. And it's so premature to say what's going to happen with Medicare and Social Security. So I think apart from saying we all need to be saving, we all need to understand that we're probably going to live to be 90. So we need to have a lot of money to take care of whatever comes along. I don't think younger people should start panicking about Social Security and Medicare.
And a lot of people are just going to work a lot longer because they are going to live till 90.
Yes, exactly. And I hope for many of those people, it will be work that they find stimulating, that they feel allows them to leave a legacy. And so it will be work that really is a positive, life-enhancing part of what they're doing.
When you address your audiences like you did last night in Worthington, what do you talk about? What are you telling them?
What we talked about last night, we really used the women's movement. We did a 60-year road trip. So the first 30 years was looking back at the women's movement and looking at how far we have come as women, recognizing that we have a long way to go. But going back to, say, 1980 and thinking about what perceptions of women were, what opportunities were, and saying we have achieved a lot. And then we started at 2011, looked forward and said, let's now look at this new stage of life from our 50s to our 70s. Everyone is living about 25 years longer than they did 100 years ago. And so let's define this as a new encore stage of life. And let's understand that each of us is contributing as we did in the women's movement. So we're at the beginning of something new. And we talked about some different ways that we can give more shape and support to people in this encore stage of life.
In the last hour, we were talking about infidelity among people who have great power, politicians and folks like that. And we kind of wrapped it up talking about the women who stand by their man. How has it changed? And that may be changing. How does our relationship with the men in our lives affect what we're going to do in that next stage and in redefining what that next stage will be?
I think that varies a lot.
Well, whoever our partner
is. Right.
Yes,
right. Yes, sure. I think I talk to a lot of women who have the husbands who are more stay at home and want a quiet, restful life. And these are women who are saying, I'm not ready for that. I feel like I'm in my prime. So the Transition Network offers them a great opportunity to be together with other people who are looking at what's next. So that's one example. I think many people have supportive partners who are also thinking about what's next, making different kinds of moves, supporting women in moving into new careers. So I think it's a varied landscape, but the good news is there are people out there who can help you as a woman say, what would you like to do? And here's how you could do it.
We have two Facebook comments, one from Bev. She writes, I think that a lot of us are in the sandwich generation, helping our parents and our kids. I had my children when I was young, early 20s, and they are now struggling to raise families in this rotten economy. Meanwhile, I'm helping my mother who has dementia, and I'm retired and enrolling in Medicare. Lots of issues here. Three exclamation points after that. Thanks, Bev.
Amen. Bev, I think you need some friends to talk to and some people who maybe, you know, you're not seeing them every day, so you can be candid about what's happening. You can hear how they're handling different issues, and they can help you find some resources that maybe you're not aware of. So it's a challenging situation that actually we had a question like that last night about the sandwich generation and how we're coping. Just know that you're not alone, and by spending a little bit of time, investing time in yourself to get together with other women, that will help you find some answers.
My guest is Betsy Worley. She's executive director of the Transition Network. She's with us for a few more minutes. If you have a question or comment, make it quick, 614-292-8513. We have this from Christine on Facebook. She says, an issue I think boomers face is the transition to using technology in work and life. I know my parents barely know how to send email. They're in their 50s. That's terrible, Christine. Betsy. Teach them, Christine.
Sorry to
teach
hear
them.
That. Yes. One of the things we're seeing is that the iPad is transforming life for a lot of people. In fact, on a personal note, my family just got an iPad for my father, who's 84. And so I think absolutely there's some parts of current computers and mouses that are just hard to learn, possibly. But I think technology is moving to a point where it will be much more intuitive. So hang in there, and I think people will, you know, we will have technology that's easier for us to use.
And easier physically to handle. I was thinking about Kindle for my dad, who has a hard time holding up books.
Mm-hmm.
Just things like that.
Yes, I agree. And again,
but in their 50s?
In their 50s, that surprises me, yes.
But generally, do you have to be willing to be flexible? And you mentioned about that, the instinctual, you know, yearning to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You have to tap into that, though, first.
You do. And so I think that's right. And so the women I'm seeing in the Transition Network are women who get up, get out of the house and say, let me find out what's out there. It's a big, wide world, and I want to be part of it, whether it's technology, travel, new ideas. You know, I'm interested in all of it, and this can help me sort out where I might go next.
In all of your travels representing the Transition Network, anything new under the sun, anything that surprised you or a trend that's popped out in the last year that surprises you or is notable?
One of the things I've seen, which is exciting, is certainly women in their 50s and even 60s are moving to new cities. And sometimes that's because of family. They're moving to be close to the kids and the grandkids. But in a recent case, a woman moved from Washington to San Francisco because her husband was on a glide path to retirement, but he got a great job offer. And so these are people who are showing up in a new city and saying, well, I don't have kids, so I don't have the school context. I'm not going back to work, or maybe I'm going to work in a different kind of job, looking around saying, where is my community? So this woman who was in Washington said to her husband, I love the idea of something new. We just have to move to a city where there's a Transition Network chapter because I need to plug into a community. So I think that's, you know, that is happening again after a period, the recession, where people weren't moving so much. And it's great to see that there are some resources.
Well, Betsy Worley, thanks for joining us again today.
My pleasure, and thank you.
Betsy Worley, she is executive director of the Transition Network. There is a chapter in Central Ohio. We'll have a link to their website on our website at WOSU.org. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.